Welcome to Second Chance Podcast, a community voice dedicated to changing corrections for good. I'm Artie Finn, your host of the Second Chance Podcast. I'm also the co-founder of APDS, a public benefits corporation dedicated to breaking the cycle of incarceration and preparing the justice impacted to earn a living wage career. As the only certified B Corporation Corrections, we are also committed to providing our educational technology platform at no cost to those incarcerated or their friends and family. On Second Chance Podcast, you'll hear directly from local, regional, and national change agents that affect the lives and outcomes of the more than 600,000 justice impacted that are released from prisons, jails, and juvenile facilities every year. Did you know they are released with little to no resources or skills? Join me as we talk to the change agents working hard to change corrections for good. On this episode, I speak with Commissioner Carol Meachie of the Massachusetts Department of Correction about the role of education technology, improving outcomes for justice-impacted individuals, and the importance of continued learning as the key to growth as a person. Today, we have the honor of speaking with a remarkable leader who has made her mark in the field of corrections, Commissioner Carol Meachie of the Massachusetts Department of Correction. In honor of Women's History Month, it's worth noting that Carol Meachie is a part of a growing trend of women in leadership positions within corrections. In fact, 20 out of the 50 heads of corrections in the United States are women, a significant milestone for the gender equity in this historically male-dominated field. We're excited to learn more about Carol Meachie's journey in corrections and her department's focus on rehabilitation and reducing recidivism. Welcome, Commissioner Meachie.
Thank you.
For our listeners that aren't familiar with the role of commissioner, can you tell us a little bit about what it means to be a commissioner? What do you do? What do you oversee? What's it like?
So as a commissioner, I oversee an agency. There's currently 15 facilities within Massachusetts Department of Correction, budget of almost $730 million, staff of approximately 4,500, and a custody population of approximately 6,000, which is greatly reduced in the last several years for many, many reasons. So as a commissioner, I am a policymaker. You make decisions all day long. You are engaged with the Executive Office of Public Safety and Security, the Governor's Office, legislative advocacy groups, the custody population, all the other internal stakeholders. Every day is different. You just never know what challenge you are going to be faced with as the agency head. So it's all of my years of training, you would hope would prepare you for that. But sometimes you just go with what's thrown your way and you work through it with your team and you make the best decisions you can for the life and safety of everyone that is living and working inside the prisons and facilities.
I can only imagine how stressful that sometimes can be. So what led you to pursue a career in corrections? How did you end up in the correctional industry, so to speak?
I went to school, college for psychology and criminal justice. And quick little side story, my father told me I was never going to make any money. So he said, you need to take a computer class. Just promise me you'll take a computer class in college. So I did, and I got a D. So I called him and said, I'm not taking any more computer classes. I'm staying down my path. And I graduated with my degree in psychology with a minor in criminal justice, moved on and got my master's in public administration. And I started right out of college in corrections, and I didn't really know what I was getting into. I thought it was just going to be a job. And every couple of years, I kept getting promoted, and I turned it into a career. And I have loved every day of every job I've had. And this is my 36th year in the department. So what led me this way? I just wanted to help people. I wanted to make a difference. I've always wanted to make a difference in people's lives. And I chose this population, maybe not necessarily by choice, that I understand that I was working in the prison system in Massachusetts when I first became a caseworker or a counselor, as we used to be called. Quickly learned where I was and all about the agency, and I never looked back.
I love that. I think a lot of people, when they think about corrections, think about it as a security job. And I love your approach, which is this is about rehabilitation and helping people.
Correct. It's about transforming lives. And we can all be really good role models for people who probably didn't have solid role models in the past. And I've always said that the punishment is the sentence. And when they step foot into our facilities, that's where the work begins.
I love that. So tell us a little bit about women's roles in corrections. Have you had the sort of experience that a lot of women have had in traditionally male-dominated fields? What's that like?
So when I first started back in 1987, it was a male-dominated agency. And there were women working, but for the most part, the women were in caseworker roles, clerical roles. There was some leadership back then with women, but they were generally in the women's facilities, not necessarily in the men's facilities. And then as time went on, things, it morphed a little bit and women were starting to get more involved in the security side of things, in management security positions, not just on the classification, reentry, and programs. Over the years, I saw classification, reentry, and the program side of the house and security meet in the middle and start to really work together very, very well. And though that model really worked. So I think now that we see, as you indicated, the 20 out of the 50 directors across the country or commissioners across the country are women, we're starting to see that in our agencies too. And women want to be promoted and they want to be in management position. It is definitely changing because I think it can't be all women and it can't be all men. It needs to be a nice complement of both because we think very differently. And in corrections, you need the compassionate side, but you also need to maintain security. And I think that's sometimes where men and women can really do a great job together.
I love that. I love that. So just to end the topic around careers, what advice do you give folks who are considering coming into the correctional field?
My advice is always, anytime I have a new recruit class come in, I make sure I address the recruit class. And it's about embracing change and being a change agent. You can impact somebody's life. You can impact somebody in custody, but you can also impact your partner, your coworker, your supervisor in many, many ways. We can all be leaders in this agency. You don't have to have the title of a leader or a senior manager or a commissioner. We can all be leaders because we're working with people who are competent, but they're in custody. So we need to help them make the right choices. And as tough as the job is, I think you need to be proud if you wear a uniform to put that uniform on and realize that you can make history.
I love that. I think you can make history one individual at a time, right?
I agree with that.
So as we transition to sort of a wider topic of education and workforce training, I want to ground the audience in a little bit of data. So there's approximately 2 million people incarcerated in this country. The recidivism rate on average is 43% after 3 years. Yet only 17% of the people we incarcerate have access to programming. So tell us a little bit about how Massachusetts approaches programming and why you think it's important for folks to do that, to invest in programming rather.
So I think it's important to invest in programming because many of the people that walk through our doors have not had the opportunity to finish school, to be involved. There are criminogenic needs. There are paths that they chose that were not necessarily the right path. And we need to correct that behavior or put them on the right path. And what brought them into prison, you learn those skills and get those tools from programming and education can also be your pathway right back out. So that is why we start with assessment and enrollment as soon as we possibly can. And we, over the years, I have seen a lot of changes in programming and education and making sure that many things have gone through research or are proven to reduce recidivism. We're always looking at ways to try to improve that. So it's a very big investment. It's a very important investment. Not only does it help the incarcerated individual learn new skills or retrain themselves, it makes them look at them, their individual self about who they are, maybe who they were, what they want to become. And it also creates an environment where you can have very positive role models around you. And programming and education can only make that even better.
So I know a lot of commissioners get criticized for investing in programming. You know, my child doesn't have access to maybe some of the same resources. And yet you and I both know 95% of the folks we incarcerate in this country are going to get out. And talk a little bit, you know, you've talked about the importance of programming. Talk a little bit about how we want to keep people out, right? What's the Massachusetts perspective on that?
The perspective is always to reduce your recidivism. We do not want people coming back in like a revolving door. And while we're all about first, second, third, fourth chances, we'll give that opportunity all the time. We'd rather it work the first time. And the only way to do that is for people to engage in what is going to improve their outcomes on the outside. They're all coming home, as you said, for the most part. A very small percentage is not going to come home, but it's, and they could be living next door to you. So you want somebody who is prepared to reenter society with the skills they need to be successful. So we as leaders have to be a part of that change. Otherwise, corrections is just, it's just a big building with rooms. We need to create an environment that we can learn, we can live, we can eat healthy, we can make good choices, and we can really invest in ourselves.
I love that. One of my big things is, you know, most of this country, corrections is a warehouse. It's a giant warehouse where we just keep people. And if we don't invest in education and rehabilitation, folks are going to come out and we will not have used their time wisely. And they will just go back to what they know. Right. And so I'm a big proponent of that. Can you talk a little bit about technology? So for people who don't know, correctional institutions have some classrooms that might be a surprise to some, but they're limited. And traditionally, when you go into a classroom, it's much more like a one-room schoolhouse, right? You're lucky if you get into it. Once you're into it, even if you're all teaching the learning the same subject, you're all at very different levels. And so how can technology play a role in sort of changing that equation, getting more people into education, rehabilitation? You know, tell us a little bit about that.
So technology was not around when I first started. It was, well, let's hope you can get into the classroom. You can get out on a work release job, whatever it might be. It was limited. So over the years, we have created more classroom space and certainly created more programs, but there's never, ever enough for everybody that's incarcerated. So what can technology do? Technology can augment and improve outcomes. And when we started bringing technology into the department, we saw improved outcomes immediately. Not only is it a tool for the individual who's incarcerated to learn how to use, because they may have never used anything like that on the streets before, it's also about being involved in using your time wisely. So you could certainly sit in your room or cell and watch TV or get involved in activities you shouldn't. But if you have technology, then we can counter that and we can start to see. And what we're starting to see, and I'll talk a little bit about how we embarked upon this, is that we are seeing the incarcerated folks being very involved in using hours and hours of their time working on what we partnered with APDS is these fantastic education tablets. So back in 2021 in February, so we're over 2 years now, We started using the tablets in units where there was much less out of cell time. So it was a great way for that person who needed to be separated from general population for whatever reason to have the opportunity to use tablets and use their time wisely when they didn't have a lot of out of cell time. We quickly learned was that we needed to offer that to everybody. It can't just be the people who are possibly in situations that they couldn't help or they could help and just made some bad choices. So since that time, I am happy to say that we have rolled out, I think, 4,500 tablets over the last 6 to 10 months and have seen what we used to see took years of educational classroom activity to actually months for people to successfully achieve a high set examination. So as you indicated, you'd get on a wait list. You'd wait for your name to be called. Your name would be called. You went to class Tuesday and Thursday morning from 10 to 12. And then you did your homework in your cell if you or in your room, wherever you were living. Not a lot of interaction. You couldn't ask for help. We now have technology, a piece of technology that you can work on your homework 24 hours a day if you wanted to, because you're in your space using it to the best of your ability. We saw improvement and academic growth very, very quickly and couldn't wait to roll out the rest of the tablets when we saw that early on.
First of all, not just because I am the co-founder of APDS, but I think for a jurisdiction to invest the type of resources, staff power, because it's not just technology alone that changes outcomes. We know that. But to have the whole system aligned to deliver programming is phenomenal. And the fact that it's ubiquitous and that it's individualized is, I think, even more impressive. So big congratulations to you all. I know together we're really going to see some very interesting things come out of it. I know when I go inside correctional facilities, I talk to folks who are using the devices. Have you done that? Do you have any stories you could share with us?
Yes, I love to visit the institutions. I was at probably in the last 30 days, one of the facilities that I went in, I purposely went into the inmate rooms and talked to the inmates that were, and they were on their tablets. So I said, all right, let me see what you're doing. They're showing me what they're doing. But they said the signal wasn't working in their rooms. So I said, well, the point was that it needs to work in your room. It can't be because you're in the day room or outside. It's all about making sure you have access to that technology all the time. So quickly made a couple phone calls and we made a couple fixes and those tablets are working in those rooms. Every person I have spoken to has really liked it. They're still trying to embrace it and figure it out. But we were able to put together what we called a central tablet committee. And they really helped with the rollout and the instruction on how to use the tablets. Because like I said earlier, this is a very new device to many of these people. And that's really helped. And we actually just created a tutorial video that will load onto the tablet and show them how to use it so they can always go back to figure out, oh, that's how I get to that screen. That's how I do this. It's been very, very positive. And it's been very positive with the staff too, because the incarcerated folks are using their time very wisely. And it's new and exciting. Change is hard for people. It's hard. And as you indicated, it's, these people are incarcerated. Why do they get tablets? Because they need to get a new set of skills or improve the set of skills that they have in order to increase their chances out in the community. And education, as we all have read about over the many years, is the number one reducer of recidivism. So whatever we can feed to the inmate population, that is exactly what, as a commissioner, I want to do.
I love it. I think, Carol, some of the challenges that other jurisdictions have faced in rolling out technology, because a lot of I don't know if everyone knows who's listening, but a lot of folks have to pay. Incarcerated folks have to pay. Their families have to pay for access to technology. In this case, the state invested. And if you could talk a little bit about, you know, why did the state invest? What is important about states doing that? How did you get that done? You know, any tips you can provide?
So I've been asking for a long time. So I was patient, but I was persistent. And my bosses above me in the Executive Office of Public Safety were very supportive of why I wanted this. And they totally agree that we need to provide the right platforms for people in custody to have access. So when we were able to finally secure the funding, it actually went through fairly quickly. And, you know, it already had an established relationship with APDS because we certainly were looking at tablets, many different tablets. And I think it's really all about the relationships you have, the persistence, and the data. It tells a whole narrative, as we all know. It tells a story. So if I have a high recidivism rate, and then I compare the people who have received a high set or higher while they're in custody, and then I compare them to the people who haven't, and the recidivism rate in Massachusetts in my own facility is 5 to 6 to 7 to 8% lower, I don't know what else you can say. And then you look at all the meta-analysis across the country of education and programming and vocational and secondary and what it does for people. And it does, it gives you employable skills. It gives you confidence. It gives you some more will. And it's going to greatly increase your chances of not wanting to ever come through those front doors again.
Well, and as you said earlier, there's a revolving door, right? And a lot of people don't realize that revolving door extends beyond just the person who's incarcerated. It extends to their families. And so I think by investing in a generational change, you will see that across the state. I, for one, am super excited to see what you all, the data that will come out. So do you have advice for, one, a lot of the people listening to this are currently incarcerated? What advice would you give them? Particularly, we're fortunate, most of the folks listening who are incarcerated have access to an APDS device. So what advice would you give them?
My advice is to whatever is offered to help you grow as a person, take advantage of it. Technology can be challenging. It's daunting. It can be scary. Ask questions. Learn. Just continuously learn. I say that to incarcerated folks and non-incarcerated folks. When you stop learning, you stop living. So keep learning and make sure you take advantage of it. It doesn't just have to be an educational opportunity. It could be a TED Talk. It could be life skills. So many things we can learn from just listening to other people. So I would say, don't be scared of it. If you don't have access to tablets, start talking to your administration, to your superintendents. It is a game changer, I think, for corrections. You know, unfortunately, we all went through this little thing called COVID in the last 3 years. And I think we've all learned, whether you're in custody or working in custody, that we don't ever want to go through that again. And if we do, now Massachusetts has tools that if for some reason, and I'm knocking on wood, I don't want to ever have to go through that again, that I have to do some kind of a modified situation at an institution for whatever reason, that's why I wanted the technology to work in their cell or in their room, not out just in the day area or on the tiers, because at least there is something that you have access to that can feed you information, keep your mind sharp, and just, again, keep learning.
So I want to touch on one more thing, and then I want to talk a little bit about correction staff, because they are sort of the key to a well-run institution, a happy population. But back to incarcerated learners, is there a a type of job or role you can envision them doing, leveraging technology? And I'm just sort of going out there because I personally have this belief that we can use technology to do things like digital apprenticeships. There's so much more we can sort of push the technology. Is that something the state has thought of?
Yes, we have, because we always have our, you know, what do we want to see for change? So we have tablets now. Great. We'll use them. We'll continue to load information. We'll make sure the technology and the programming that is consistent with the job market on the outside. So we're always going to do that now that we have the tablet. But the other thing I think I have thought about, and I've certainly shared my vision, is using technology and education to create the right environment too. So an environment I think is extremely important. While we can't create maybe the exact same thing as the community, we can do things to stimulate growth and learning. And a couple of those things is synchronous and asynchronous learning environment. So currently we have one of our programs is we're working with another county. Now we've never done that before. So we have people in custody in Massachusetts and they're working with people that are in custody in another county. That never happens. So think about when you do. Now, I was a guest instructor for UMass Lowell a couple weeks back, and all of the students were at home, and they're all connected to me, their professor. So think about the people who are incarcerated. It would feel a lot more real if you were with some people that were from another state, another county, another town. And that, to me, is more of a learning environment, because I think for anyone that's been in school, that's how you learn too. It's not always just about the curriculum, the social aspect too. So you really can learn a lot from your fellow classmates. So I think that is something that we are going to embrace even more. And then the other thing is vocational training, post-secondary. We can load a lot of that stuff onto tablets and technology. It doesn't have to be in a shop. We can, you know, there's a lot of learning environments. So we've thought about that. And then the last thing that we've really thought about is the STEM.
I love that.
Science, technology, engineering, and math. So a different learning environment. So there are things that we can really expose people to. And, you know, I always say we're great at making sure that the incarcerated population gets what they need because that is who we serve. But we can't forget that the staff need to make sure that they are part of this solution and that they're included. So how can the staff help in this? What can they do? What's their role? We've started some great partnerships with different colleges for scholarships over the years. And I just want to make sure that is while we have a commitment to the incarcerated, we have a commitment to our staff too, to make sure the environment that they work in is healthy, happy, morale is good. And I think if the incarcerated folks are doing productive things with tablets and everything else, I think it only creates a better environment.
I was going to ask, have you seen lower violence rates inside your facilities as a result of the technology? And then we can shift to a staff conversation because I definitely want to get to that.
So the tablets are fairly new over the last 10 months. So I will say that they are used a great deal. So if I know they're being used, then I could probably hypothetically say they're not probably engaging in other activities that they shouldn't be. So
good answer.
Okay.
Good answer. So let's talk a little bit about staff. In many ways, for folks who don't know, correctional staff are very much like teachers inside correctional facilities. Yes, they're responsible for safety and security, but they're also teachers. How do you think they are impacted by this technology? And then I want to go on and talk a little bit about how could technology help the staff themselves?
So I think when we first started it, it was change and it came across as a reward for someone who had possibly committed a disciplinary infraction because of the units we started the tablets in. But I think as the use in these units increased with the population, it staff saw that, okay, this is a positive thing for them to be doing. They're not getting in trouble. They're not causing havoc. So we've definitely started to see the shift.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's, I think it's all about the philosophy from the top down. That includes the superintendents at each facility, that it's, you know, it's not about a reward. Look at it as an incentive to do the right thing, an opportunity. How about an opportunity to make sure that, yeah, maybe we didn't all have access to this when we were on the outside, but we do now. And let's just embrace that. So I think we're starting to see that shift, that corrections is changing. There's a lot of reform out there. There's reasons for reform. And that's what we're all about. Reform, transformation, changing lives. It's just a slow process. And I think you just have to make sure that staff understand why you're doing what you're doing. Don't just give it to them and say, this is what you're doing. Make sure they understand there's reasoning behind it. Get them to buy in and be comfortable with it. And I can be really successful.
That's actually a very good point. So implementation, you can't just roll out technology without an implementation plan and a training plan for both the incarcerated learners who need to know how to use it, but also the staff, the why, the how, and then how do we support that? I know that you all are doing something sort of unique with your staff in the sense that they all have, I believe they are notebooks or binders with everything that's on the device at their correctional stations, right? So that when someone comes up to them and asks them a question, they can look up in the binder and say, this is what, this is how you do that, or this is where you find that.
Yes, yes, we did that because the central team couldn't be at every institution at any time of the day. So we wanted the facility to feel responsible for it. And it's been a great way for some interactions, some building of relationships as far as just everyday talk. Hey, I don't know how to do this. Do you know how to do this? And what I will say is, you know, we probably have four generations in our workforce right now. This is where that younger generation really helps because they're just so technically savvy. And we've seen that just helping us with just the environment of corrections, never mind the tablet. So those binders were a great idea and they've proven to be very beneficial.
That's great. The four generations sort of blew my mind. I can't imagine one end to end, but you know, I will say for folks who are listening to this and have not been inside a correctional facility, it is an opportunity for you to visit what in many ways, while it may look like a correctional facility, it's actually becoming a school in many ways. And as we start to transform corrections from warehousing to true rehabilitation, that school aspect needs to permeate across the country. And I think you'll then start to see staff who are there more on the social work and training side as opposed to the security side. I think that'll be a really exciting thing to see. And I think Massachusetts is actually probably going to be one of the first states to get there.
So yeah, it's true. I mean, we have to maintain security and certainly that's utmost importance. But with all these tools, the roles can change and you can do both. You can do both. I started as a correctional counselor and there was no correctional officers at this facility. So you maintained a relationship with the offender based on it, whatever his or her needs were. You were their caseworker. You met their families at visits. On the other end, I was conducting security counts when an inmate walked out the front door because it wasn't a locked facility and we called him an escape. I'd have to go find him. I was at the court. So your role was very, very different. So you can maintain both. You can hold people accountable, but you can still help.
I love that. That is actually a fantastic ending to this conversation. You can hold people accountable, but you can still help. Carol, you have been amazing to speak with. I am very impressed with the philosophy, the commitment to change the state has made, and I look forward to many more conversations. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining Second Chance Podcast, where we meet change agents dedicated to breaking the cycle of incarceration and changing corrections for good. Please remember to like, comment, share, and subscribe. For more information, go to APDS.works and follow us on LinkedIn and Twitter at APDS and on Instagram at APDS_Equity Alliance. Please continue to join us on Second Chance, the community voice dedicated to changing corrections for good forever. Everyone deserves a second chance.